I'm Patricia Camilleri, and in this series called Talking Books, I shall be asking my guests about their personal relationship with the written word. I'm very pleased to have with me today on Talking Books, Dr. Adrian Greemer. Dr. Greemer read for a BA General, BA Honours and an MA here at the University and followed this with his PhD, which he completed in 2003. He now lectures in Maltese literature at the University of Malta, specialising in metaphor and Mediterranean influences. He's organised the first International Festival of the Short Story that took place in 2005, and also ran the European Symposium to promote Maltese literature internationally, organised by InitiaMed and Literature Across Frontiers. He published in 1999 It Trumbetir, a book of poetry in Maltese with illustrations by Adrian Marmor and Rafael Vella, and translations into English by Peter Sergino and Glott. And the book was placed second in the Premio Tivoli Europa Giovani 1999. His poetry has appeared in various publications worldwide and has been translated into 13 languages. And in 2005, Mitzi Books and InitiaMed published The Tragedy of the Elephant, a collection of poetry translated into English in the series Contemporary Maltese Literature and Translation. In 2006 appeared Rakmu, another collection of poetry, and Dr. Greemer has also edited several books, as well as being involved in radio work, even on this campus FM. He's coordinator of InitiaMed, which he set up with others in 1998, and is Malta correspondent for the Mediterranean culture website BabelMed. September 10th to 12th, he will be organising with InitiaMed the Malta Mediterranean Literature Festival, and that will take place in the courtyard of the old university. A very warm welcome to you, Dr. Greemer. Clearly, judging from that very brief bio, books are key, really, to your existence, your personal experience and your professional now experience, and particularly, obviously, in poetry. Where did this attachment really come from?
That's a good question, because I was quite a reader when I was young, but nothing, for example, like my son Samuel, who's an avid reader. I used to like reading these true stories. I wasn't such a fan of fiction, I would say, and definitely not of poetry. Even though I was fascinated by poetry, I used to go to this primary school, St. Dorothy's, where we were forced to learn poetry by heart, and I don't think I disliked that, like many of my friends. So somehow there's a dialectical relationship with books. I became increasingly attached to books, I think, as I grew older and I started to read. I think it's fascinating because you can see yourself in books and you can see your own aspirations, your own dreams, your own mistakes, your own failings. I think that's very much what we experience in books. Recently I was reading this really interesting article on La Repubblica. I was recently in Sicily on holiday, but we'll talk about that later, I know. And there was this interesting article in La Repubblica in which they talked about how reading is, when a person reads about, for example, a character raising his or her hand, the same areas of the mind that are activated, the areas of the mind that are activated are those that are activated when a person himself or herself actually raises their hand. So what these American researchers have found is that when we read fiction, for example, it's as if we are doing what the characters we are reading about are doing. So this kind of gives a scientific basis to the argument that when you when you read a novel or poetry, you get into it. You feel as if you're part of it.
Yes, that takes the concept of the physicality of the word to a sort of new level somehow.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I know that later on in the programme, I hope we'll have a little time to talk about Maltese literature and perhaps a little bit about your own, but perhaps we can talk about the books you've chosen to focus on today. La Danza del Gabbiano by Andrea Camilleri and Balthazar's Odyssey by Amin Maalouf. Andrea Camilleri has become perhaps one of the most commercially successful writers in Italy with his works translated into numerous languages. I think his hometown has even officially added Vigata, the fictitious town in his books, to its name to become Porto Empedocle Vigata. His success even defies bad reviews, which he actually does get occasionally. People just keep buying his trademark Salvo Montalbano books, and also, of course, his historical novels. Why do you think this is?
I'm probably so enthusiastic about Camilleri's book that I've just read because I've only read one. I mean, many addicts of the Montalbano series would say that they, you know, they wouldn't miss any one of the series. But so I really enjoyed the irony, the ironic humor, as you called it earlier. I think it's fascinating. I think the way he reacts is so real, so true. He's so human. And he's such a character. He's intelligent, he's incorrigible in so many ways. So he's a really interesting character. The novels, well, at least I've read one, the latest one, La Danza del Gabbiano. I think it's also very unpredictable in narrative terms. So you don't know what's going to happen. It's not like reading one of those novels where you know where it's taking you. And also, as a person who loves languages and who's interested also in the works, in the makings of the Maltese language, I'm fascinated by the closeness and the influence of Sicilian or Maltese. So you get words like busillisi, which you wouldn't find in Italian, at least I've never come across it. You know, you get things like pressioni in the singular. Like we put the final I at the end. The Italians would say pressioni, we would say pressioni. Intelligenti, for example. Surnames like Mali and, of course, Camilleri himself. It's fun to see the way the Sicilian has influenced Maltese. And then there are these, you know, these more political jibes, like his reference to Berlusconi and his wife's public letter, his wife's first public letter because of his behavior in public. One other thing that, you know, kept me thinking, but this is as a kind of critic, is his reference to the television series. Salvo Montalbano refers to the guy who's Luca Zingaretti, who plays Montalbano in the television series. But he calls him Zingarelli, as most Italians would. Zingarelli, however, is well known for the dictionary, the Italian dictionary. So there's this self-conscious self-consciousness, which is really fun. One thing I wanted to say about his language. I was talking to friends of mine in Sicily, and they were telling me that it's really his Sicilian. In many ways, it's a Sicilian he has created. He's created his own language. It's not like you can talk about one Sicilian dialect. This is Camilleri's Sicilian dialect. Apparently it's a bit oldish also. I was a bit shocked when I opened it and said, oh gosh, this Sicilian, how am I going to get through this? But then it was, quite easy to get used to the rather unusual words here and there and, you know, piece it all together. And this is probably even the experience of many Italians who don't know any Sicilian dialect.
He's been described very simply as a grande giallista, soprattutto grande scrittore. From this book of his that you read, did you feel that the sort of giallo side of it was well represented?
Absolutely. I think it's very much a detective story. And he's not really after, you know, great characterization or philosophical insights. He has these really nice psychological comments here and there. And I think his characters are also quite well created, portrayed, depicted, fabricated, if you want. But he's not after what, I don't know, Adolf Zweig is after in a book I'm reading at the moment, which is The Map of Love, or what Amin Maalouf is after in his Le Périple de Baldassare. You can't expect Camilleri to do something different than what he, you know, set out to do. It's a detective story, ultimately.
But he's not really the hero. He himself doesn't allow Montalbano to become, Camilleri doesn't allow Montalbano
Absolutely.
To become a hero.
Absolutely.
So he's very much a man, even in his relationship with Livia.
Yeah, absolutely. That's... His relationship with Livia is always, you know, his ways are often incorrigible, unacceptable. He's a man, he's a real man in the sense, he's a real person, I mean, mm-hmm. in this sense, mm-hmm. with all his, you know, defects and defects.
You said you've been in Sicily recently, and therefore if you've been driving around Sicily, especially at this time of year where the heat's rising off the land and it's all very sort of close, sort of afoso, there's very much that Sicilian atmosphere, which is, I think, reflected in much of Sicilian literature, even obviously the most famous of them, Tommaso di Lampedusa, etc. Do you think that Camilleri's background, it is key to the way he writes?
That's a difficult question, I think, because I think every writer creates their own world in a way. So, I mean, I think Camilleri could easily be criticized for creating a Sicily that does not exist. And I think he can likewise be lauded for depicting Sicily perfectly. Because there are so many Sicilies, there are so many Maltas. So I think that he creates a convincing world within itself. His diegesis, the world he creates is convincing. It's not fake. The friendships he creates are not fake. The heat, the conflicts, the influence of religion or of society, of family, they're very real, I think. What I often like to do is that when I travel through a country, I like to read something somehow connected to that country. And this is why I was reading Camilleri, traveling through Modica, Scicli, Ragusa, Ibla. These are the places where many of his novels are set, and also where the television series is set. And it's fascinating. It's fascinating to walk through these streets where they're filming and places he mentions in the novel, and then actually reading about them. I love this connection. I did it when we traveled through Bosnia, Herzegovina, and Croatia, and I was reading about the Balkan War. And even though I was reading about some really terrible experiences, mainly from Slavenka Drakulic, I felt that reading about that, you know, terrible experience put me in a way much closer to the people, to the maimed people we met, and to the anguish you could feel even in the buildings.
Going back to his writing for a moment, it's a strange combination. Another quote that I found is, mai facili concessioni, se so quanto è necessario, e mai importuno volgare, sangue e violenza solo se indispensabili. Niente di irrazionale, nessuna concessione al mistero. Really, it sounds quite watered down somehow, but he somehow manages to be impressive, despite the fact that he doesn't go overboard on any of those descriptions either. He never exaggerates. I don't know whether you found that in this particular book.
Well, that's a very relative point, and I agree. I absolutely agree with the point, but it's also always so relative. I mean, you would say something like that in the context of Italian literature, which is open, which has tackled so many themes. Some of the things he writes would probably be frowned upon here in Malta, for example. I don't feel him as a writer to be particularly restrained, But I absolutely agree with you that he certainly doesn't go, you know, overboard. He certainly doesn't create some kind of sensationalist narrative or even language. Mm. In this way, I find him very convincing. That's why I like his character so much. Mm. There's friendship, but there's also, you know, a certain egoism or perhaps egocentrism, perhaps more egocentrism than anything else.
He's also the writer himself has by now become, sometimes he's seen as a bit of a caricature of himself, because he's now become famous also for the Fiorello imitation of him, which is all gravelly voice and cigarettes, and very, very laid back. Mm. He comes over as, even in interviews, himself, Camilleri, as a sort of laid back person. So one can't imagine him somehow writing things which were overboard.
Recently, he's become quite politically engaged. He's you know, passed a lot of comments about Berlusconi and about things like immigration and you know, kind of racist laws that have been passed recently in what some would consider, I would consider, racist laws in Italy recently. But on the other hand, I think people still like him because he's honest. You may disagree with him, but you certainly wouldn't think that he's somehow abusing of his fame to, you know,
push forward an agenda or something.
Some kind of personal agenda. He doesn't need to. He's already famous enough.
Absolutely. And famous not only as a writer, but also as a director. I mean, he's well known in obviously in films, and you know, he has such a wide range of talents that he's become a bit of a sort of an institution, really, at this point. Let's leave Camilleri for a moment and pass on to Amin Maalouf, the writer of Balthasar's Odyssey. Maalouf himself, I was just doing a little bit of research, obviously, for this program, he comes over as a fascinating, fascinating writer. Perhaps you could tell us just a little bit about him.
Well, Maalouf emigrated to France and has written mainly, or I think exclusively, in French. He's been translated into so many languages. For those who are interested, interested in this particular subject of identity, he has this book translated into English, which is called simply On Identity. And he talks about what he calls his multiple identities. And he argues very convincingly, I would say, that we don't have one. Each and every one of us, we don't have one identity, we have many identities. And these identities are not only plural, but also in flux, in constant flux. And I think this is so true, and it is so dangerous, sometimes tragic, when we think of ourselves in very monolithic, very solidified terms. Because then we start building walls, we start feeling threatened, and all that. This is a fantastic novel. I really enjoyed it. I actually bought it when I was in France because the blurb at the back said that it's a journey through the Mediterranean. I was hoping that he would reflect on the whole idea of the Mediterranean or Mediterranean identity or identities in the book. He doesn't really do that. He just has this fantastic character who's, again, a very real character, this Baldassare, who's a Genovese living in the Near East, in Asia Minor, actually. And he travels, let's see, throughout the Mediterranean, practically, and then also to London and back.
Not contemporary, of course.
No, it's set in 1666, which was meant to be the last year of the world. I think it was published. I think the book was published very close to it was published in the year 2000. So, you know, there was a lot of talk.
The millennium idea.
Yes, about the world ending because of the new millennium and things like that. So it's very much a book about religious conflict, about identity, about fear of the other. One of the characters which I really loved in the book is a Jew who's a great friend of this protagonist, of Baldassar, who's writing in the first person. It's a series of diary entries. It's a 520-page book with this constant series of uninterrupted series of diary entries. And this Jewish friend of his is such a warm, intelligent character, very, very interesting man. But also many of the other characters, his relationships with women are never easy, never romanticized, never idyllic. Very interesting novel, I would say. I absolutely loved reading it, I must say.
He isn't just an itinerant voyager in between lands, languages and religions. He is actually searching for something, isn't he?
Mm. I think, yes, he's searching very much for love. He's searching very much for meaning of life, meaning of our existence. In this sense, it's quite a metaphysical book, in this sense.
But he was actually looking for, if I understood rightly, because I haven't actually read the book myself, he was looking for a book,
yes,
that was going to be the answer,
yes,
to the whole.
He was looking
problem
for this book called Le Centième Nom, the hundredth name. And that's a reference to the hundredth name of God in Islam. So there was this book which was meant to be written by a writer called Mazhar Handani, who was meant to give the hundredth unnamed name of God, and therefore sort of a special interpretation of life and a special interpretation of the meaning of our life. And that's why he was looking for this book. And there are a series of incidents in which he gets a copy of the book, then sells it. And then, he actually ends up never really reading this book, even though he actually finds it. Because every time he tries to read it, he gets blinded. And of course, there are so many interpretations to this. It's almost as if we are, Maalouf is somehow saying that we seem to be unable as human beings to grasp what is beyond our humanness, our nature as human beings. Not so much our humanity, but even our nature itself as human beings. So
we're always looking for the key, we're looking for the philosopher's stone, we're looking for the chemical,
yes,
the chemical reaction, we're looking
the
for
the book that will, you know, open all doors, will explain everything to us, but we, even if we think we have it, then we realize we don't.
In the few minutes that remains to us, very, very couple of minutes that we got left, perhaps you could talk to us a little bit about this festival that's coming up in September and about this book by Alex Villagera that I know that you'd like to say a few words about.
Yes, Alex Villagera is one of the writers we've invited to read this year. We have Daniel Massa, and I've never actually heard Daniel Massa read in public, so I'm really excited. Personally, I mean, I'm really excited to have Daniel Massa reading in during our festival this year. He'll be accompanied by Jane Marshall, possibly by somebody else, but when we're sure, we'll talk about that. But then, of course, we have writers from... We have a bit of Amin Maalouf. We have a Moroccan writer who now lives in Lyon and writes mainly in French, but not only, Mohamed Al-Amraoui. We have Mimmo Grasso from Naples, Walter Mai Ugo Mai from Portugal, and also Marta Pesaradonia from Catalonia and Spain. And we also have Norbert Bujaya from also an interesting mix of poetry, prose, young writers, better known perhaps, older writers, some very good performers who actually play music, others who read their own poetry. We have Renzo Spiter and Jess Psyla playing music in the courtyard. Alex Villagera has this really interesting novel, L'Hélène Millienne, it's called, clearly a reference, an indirect reference to L'Hélène Millienne by Duncan. It's so fascinating. It's narrated in first person, but by five different characters. And you have kind of two parallel stories which meet towards the end. You always get the impression that somehow there's a connection between the two stories. You have the personal story of a priest who's going through a depression. But then you also have the story of this family, very much a contemporary family with all its dysfunctionality, with its homosexual son, with its kind of rebellious daughter, with its patriarchal father who thinks he's in charge and is absolutely not in charge, with Miriam, his wife, who's kind of kicked about in not physically but somehow psychologically by her husband. Really interesting novel, I think. The narrative structure is very interesting. Also, the way he uses language is interesting. And I think it's a good example of the kind of writers we'll have at the festival.
Fantastic. Well, we'll all have to come and listen to these fascinating people at the festival in September. We look forward to that. And I'd like to thank you, Dr. Adrian Creamer, for being with us today.
It was great being here.
My guest today was Dr. Adrian Creamer. I do hope that you can join me again next week for another edition of Talking Books. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.